Everybody, welcome to the ANN After Show. We're back after
a short little
break during the July anime season and anime expo.
And so it wasn't really a break for you because you were knee deep in the con.
I was in it. I survived AX 2024 Survivor. I'll be there again next year, probably. That was just round one of con adventures for me this summer, because I'll be heading out to Otakon here at the end of the month, and then next month I'll be in New York for Anime NYC.
NYC is coming up.
Yeah. Yep. So those are all coming up. But you were working preview guide that entire time too, weren't you, James?
Oh my! I was actually looking. I think I might have beaten my previous record for number of shows covered.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because every season there's always a couple I end up not being able to get to, or there's like a lot of sequels that I haven't seen.
Yeah, but sure.
This season I hit 39.
Wow.
That
is the majority of them, I think, because we had low 40s, I feel like, for the watch party. So that's most.
Yeah, I think I only missed out on Monogatari. Yeah. That one other season too that I can't even remember the name of.
Was it Shy?
Oh, there was Shy, and then there was one more. There was the one season two that has like a really long title, and I didn't even know it had a season one.
Oh, it's an isekai. I can picture the key visual in my head. It's like Our Crusade.
Yes.
Yeah, something like that.
That one.
The word crusade is in the title. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And all of them, as you know, basically came out over the span of 2 days.
Yeah, so that was crazy too. So usually we have someone in here is claiming to be an ex of mine. I'm sorry, I don't have that many exes. So unless you're going to give me your first name, I don't know who you are. So if you look at previous seasons, usually it's like a couple of like four, maybe five on like a Saturday, right? Like, or
maybe like one big day,
or there'll be one big day where there'll be like seven. This year almost everything aired. I never dated a guy named Steven. Sorry. There's all of them are like, were like over that AX weekend. I think it was like over half. More than half over the course of 4 days.
Yeah, it was kind of ridiculous. We're in the trenches.
Yeah. Yeah. So big shout out. She's not on the show with us, but to Rebecca Silverman for filling in on the editor role for me while I was at Anime Expo. We're going to talk about Anime Expo and this crazy season that we've had, as well as like some of the big news that's been coming out, all of that. So to start, I mentioned Anime NYC, and today the news just broke. The nominees for the American Manga Awards. So, like, disclaimer, I'm a judge for that. So I helped pick some of these, but I'm really excited about it. If you're in the publishing industry, you have until you want to get onto the website. It's at animenyc.com/American Manga Awards and register to vote. Because voting ends on August 1st, and then the awards will be announced on Thursday, August 22nd, at the Japan Society in New York, where I will be presenting an award. So I'm going to have like my Vanna White moment or something. It'll be great. So we announced the nominees today. Let me get this website up so you guys can actually look at it. It's got quotes from my other judges who are great. This is Bridget Alverson, Minofsky, Renee Scott, and Shannon Garrity. We were the judges specifically for new manga, new edition of classic manga, and new continuing series. And then there were awards for best translation, best lettering, but those were done by professionals in those specific categories. And nice. Same with publication design. So we actually got professional translators to nominate best translation, professional letterers to nominate best lettering. So without further ado, if someone out there can give me a little drum roll, let me, is that you smacking the space bar?
that coming through.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is over at the website. And if you read my tabs, you'll know what else we're talking about, but don't cheat. Okay. We'll get to that stuff too. So for best new manga, we have The Darwin Incident. This actually got pretty high ratings as well in the ANN manga guide when it was released. Really interesting story. This is the main character. He's a human Z, which means he's like an actual hybrid human chimp hybrid. And there's there's vegan terrorists in it, as well as
Wait, did you say vegan terrorists?
I did. Yes, vegan terrorists are in this. There's a lot of people trying to make moves to use him as a symbol for certain things, and no one's really considering like his particular ideas on like humanity and like eating meat and all these other sorts of things. It's a really interesting story. I liked it quite a lot. It's also a little bit like a superhero story because he's, you know, he's got like chimp strength powers, so those come in handy sometimes. Chimp strength. Yeah.
Anyone that saw the movie Nope will know that chimp strength is nothing to mess around with.
Bring up. I'm sorry. I haven't thought about the chimp from Nope in a hot minute, and it's a lot.
I think about the chimp from Nope every day. Okay?
Really?
No. But maybe I should, just to give him the respect that he deserves.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you go over to the webpage, you know, there's like a page to represent it for each of the entries here, but I'm just going to kind of scroll through. This is a DRCL Midnight Children. This got great reviews in the manga guide as well. So yeah, this is Shinichi Sakamoto, who people might also know as the creator of Innocent, which is like a historical manga about a professional executioner during the reign of like Marie Antoinette and all of that. Like it takes place before that, but I think he ends up being the person who executes the nobles during the French Revolution.
Runs Madame Guillotine.
Yes. Camilla, no, this is actually Dracula specifically. I don't think that there are aspects of Carmilla in it, but I've only read the first volume. I've read the first two, actually. I read the first one and then had to read the second one like immediately. So,
I mean, if you just like came up to me with that manga and that cover art in your hands and I had like 10 bucks in my wallet, I would just immediately hand you the $10.
Yeah. It changes up some of the aspects of the original story by putting all the main characters into like a English finishing school type setting. Lucy is trans in this, so is kind of living that sort of double life. Like the main characters are Lucy and Mina, who has Mina has experienced doing wrestling, like throwing and stuff, which is kind of
interesting. Would it be Victorian? Is it still Victorian?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Mina is like the first girl to ever get to attend this school. That's typically for sort of nobles' sons to intermingle and get an education and then move up into the upty-ups. And so it's Lucy, Mina, and then the three men who are Lucy's suitors in the book are all in it, as well as Redfield and Dr. Van Helsing are the ones that have shown up so far. And of course, you know, Dracula's kind of, he's around.
Between this and the Nosferatu movie coming out, Dracula fans are eating real good this year.
Yeah. So people asking, yes, Mina is red-haired, freckled girl, big tooth gap, and the one biting her here is Lucy. So anyway, so that's Dracula. Just like Mona Lisa, this is from Square Enix Books. Very interesting title. It actually isn't fully black and white. There's use of blue in it as well. And it's a romance triangle taking place in a world where humans just choose their preferred gender at age 12. But in this case, the main character Hinase has not chosen a gender and is continuing to live like non-binary at 18. And of course, both of their childhood friends confess. One is a girl, one is a boy. So that's kind of the premise there for that one. So you can see like how the blue is used here.
Very nice.
If you're watching the video version of this. Yeah.
I love it. I love it when black and white art uses like a single color.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Back when Frank Miller was good at what he did.
Remember that? It was a time.
Yeah.
Also nominated for Best New Manga is Mothers. This is from an indie publisher called Glacier Bay Books. They release a lot of like smaller manga, but I mean they're picking and choosing, and what they're choosing is really good so far.
Is this based off of a short story collection?
This is an anthology. I don't know that it's based off of a previous like written anthology.
But it is an anthology. Okay.
It is an anthology, yes. Centering around the, you know, mothers. So like the panel we have as a pick out here is kind of heavy because it's obviously a daughter talking to someone about their mother who is in a like comatose medical state, about how they can finally love their mom. So yeah, it gets pretty, you know, it deals with some heavier topics around that concept. And then Sora and the House of Monsters by Hidenori Yamaji is also nominated. This one's really good. It's a fantasy manga, but it's like post-fantasy war, what do we do now sort of situation.
Very cool.
And this character goes into constructing habitats for monsters. So if you like that, I feel like if the aspect of the monsters in Delicious and Dungeon and how they interact and cohabitated is interesting to you, like that specific thing, you will like this. So that's
lovely. My art.
Yes, the art is very nice as well. So I'll kind of run through this faster, otherwise we're not going to get to any other news. But for continuing manga, we've got Blood on the Tracks by Shuzo Oshimi of Flowers of Evil fame, Delicious and Dungeon by Roku Kui, which is just, I'll talk a little bit also about this from my experience at Anime Expo, because I've got some things to share. Dinosaur Sanctuary, which if you were a dinosaur kid, you should be reading this.
Okay.
It's for the dinosaur kids, those who never like grew out of it, or those who are still, you know, I think it's like age appropriate too. So nice. Yeah. So lots of great dinosaurs in there. She Loves to Cook, She Loves to Eat from Yen Press. Yes, which is another really good one about a lesbian couple. And then The Summer Hikaru Died, which I think I haven't shut up about. I don't know if I need to talk more about this, but
it's at the top of my list.
Yeah. Body Snatcher, just amazing art, amazing sound effects. Premises. This guy here is no longer Hikaru. Hikaru is dead. This is a entity that has taken on his form, but the best friend is not dealing with the grief very well and is sort of having this complicated relationship with the monster that is imitating and taking over his dead friend's life. Classic manga was really hard. For all of us, there's a lot of really great classic manga that's out right now, and we're going to be getting more in the next year. But so this was hard to choose, but we've got Minami's Lover, which is like a romantic sex comedy. Like the sex part of it is actually pretty frank, even though, which you don't always see in, like rom-coms. But the premise is that for unknown reasons, the guy's girlfriend shrank, and now she's about, you know, Thumbelina size. And lives in like a tall house or whatever at his place. People don't know where she's gone. Their romance life has kind of ended because she's tiny. I like the art on this one a lot. Fluffy hair.
When was this? Is this from the 90s?
Let's see. I would have 80s. To look it up for sure, but I feel like it's from the 80s. Yeah. LFR says at least she's not attached to his hand. No, that's a different story. What was that? Like Midori something where the guy has the puppet? Yeah.
Yes.
My Name is Shingo by Kazuo Umez, which I'm glad we're getting more of his stuff over. I think like the Junji Ito wave got somewhere and then people are like, oh, there's an audience for this. So My Name is Shingo is more of a sci-fi story than just a straight horror story involving a boy that's a robot. Neighborhood Story, this is Ayazawa. This came out before Paradise Kiss. at least one of the characters ended up appearing in that manga as well. But this is, you know, like a love story about a girl who won't it, who's, she's kind of like a proto gyaru, and a fashion designer. So you can expect all like the wonderful clothes and stuff to be in there, but she's not honest about her feelings. Obviously there's a guy that she's liked for a long time, very like kind of classic shoujo in that sense. And then Okinawa by Susumu Higa, which this is more of a historical story taking place on the island of Okinawa, kind of autobiographical. And then I was joking with James about this earlier. I swear I wasn't the only one who wanted UFO Mushroom Invasion in here, but we've got UFO Mushroom Invasion, which is a campy.
Is it about a UFO mushroom invasion?
It is. It's about alien mushrooms coming and nice. Colonizing. It's very campy. The art is just like amazing.
It reminds me of like an old EC comic.
Yes. Yeah. It definitely, while I was reading it, I was like, this reminds me of those horror movies, like the giant woman from Mars and stuff like that, you know, like it's just kind of ridiculous in that sense. So head over to the website. You can see all the nominees and, you know, if you qualify to vote, you know, make sure you sign up and get your votes in. We'll be presenting the awards at the end of August. So looking forward to that. Okay, so let's talk about Anime Expo.
Yeah.
Anime Expo is huge. Every year it's bigger and bigger. They actually, you know, they sold out of tickets this year. It's just a crazy, like,
is it the biggest American anime convention at this
point? It is the biggest American anime convention, has been for a while. I don't know if it's the biggest outside of Japan, because I'm not sure about the attendance numbers for Japan Expo in Paris, which is also very, very big. But it's up there in the, you know, six digits for attendees, which is just crazy.
Wild.
Yeah. Again, if you go over to Anime News Network, we have all the announcements from Anime Expo 2024, and you can see like all the news items. It's separated by day as well as the editorial items. Editorial is what I was personally overseeing while we were there. But it's just, so it just kind of keeps going.
Just doesn't like, stop.
You're like, please stop. That is what we're doing there. I'm not, of course, going to go over all the giant announcements from Anime Expo. You can go browse that for, you know, what specifically you want to talk about. But I did pull three items out of there that I thought were particularly cool, in case you missed the boat on it or you didn't hear about it. So the first one that I'd like to show you guys is they showed a teaser for Witch Hat Atelier, the anime adaptation of Kamome Shirahama's beloved manga. They finally announced who's animating it. It's Bug Films, which like puts me about here-ish because we liked Zom 100.
Yeah.
When it came out.
Yes. When it was functioning. Yes.
When it was functioning. So that's the little bit of trepidation I have there. Bug Films does have like amazing staff on it. Like they're seasoned. These aren't like newbies. They were at OLM and places like that. But
maybe this time they'll give themselves a little more headway with the production.
A little more headway or something, whatever happened with getting that show out the gate, how it needed to be. I don't want to see that happen with Witch Hat Atelier. That said, let's go ahead and watch the trailer. There we go. They actually showed it twice during the panel because everyone screamed so much the first time around. They're like, well, wants to show it again.
The music is going to be a pretty big feature too.
Yeah.
They have to compose it.
They also let us know like everything that you see in the trailer, this is footage from the episode. So this isn't like a specially animated PV where this footage isn't going to show up.
This isn't a concept trailer.
No, it's not.
Man, this looks gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah.
The background artwork.
I mean, yeah, like how they did the clouds there, and it was like you could see the type of brush strokes they were doing in the sunset.
I can only hope that they can maintain a consistent level of quality
Yeah.
Also not overworking their staff.
Yes. And I mean, some folks I talked to were happy enough with it. I mean, this doesn't quite represent the manga's art, but I don't feel like you could do that. I feel like you'd have to change it up quite a bit to get that at a level where it can be animated easily. Like we were looking at Shinichi Sakamoto's manga before. Like, if you tried to adapt a Shinichi Sakamoto manga into an anime, it can't look like Shinichi Sakamoto's art. Like,
it would take 10,000 years to animate.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I mean, you know me. I've never been the kind of guy that thinks that an anime adaptation has to be slavishly faithful to the manga. To be honest, I think anime should take more risks when it comes to not just the art, but just being willing to make things more suitable for adaptation, for pacing, for direction, for art. So, if they can make it work, I'm all for it.
Yeah. So that's not expected to premiere until next year. I'm not sure exactly. Like, I don't know that they've announced the season next year, but just kind of be on the lookout for that. But yeah, hopefully the longer lead up time means that we get something consistent quality wise. But okay, the other thing that came, or two other things that came out of Anime Expo, we talk about Uzumaki on here a lot because James and I are like, give it to us. We want the Uzumaki anime.
Speaking of how difficult it is to replicate an art style in animated form.
Yeah, I'm would not be at all surprised to find out that the director invented something for it, like some kind of software or something. Yeah. You know, like what they did with Merida's hair in Brave, like something like that, right? So we've been yelling about it because it's supposed to come out this year. We haven't heard anything about it. It's been delayed a gazillion times.
It's only four episodes, right? Like it's a mini series.
Six?
Is it six? Okay.
But I mean, it's less than 10.
Yeah.
Assuredly. Well, at Anime Expo, they announced the dub voice cast, which gives me more hope. Okay.
They have to have something for the voice actors to act against, so... Unless they're just giving them.
I was like, do they? I was thinking about like, can they just do it to animatics? Do they actually need? Yeah. So
motion comic. That would have been such a simple solution. Just do like back when they did the Watchmen motion comic and stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. I watched that whole thing too. You know, that like I had read because wasn't it? This is a tangent, but isn't it? The motion comic was an adaptation of the comic within the comic, right? It was like the Black Sails pirate comic, but that was within.
So that was like just a little animated thing they did. Oh, but around that time, because DC can't stop milking that one book. Around that time, they did a motion comic adaptation where they just did the whole comic, but with, you know, some limited animation and some voice acting.
Oh, really? Aspects. Okay.
And, you know, it was exactly what it said on the tin. It was Watchmen, but it moved a little bit and people were reading the words, so...
Whatever you gotta do. Yeah, LFR, the Black Freighter is what, that's the comic within the comic. Yeah. So back to Uzumaki, just reading off kind of a cast list here. We've got Abby Trott as Kyrie Goshima, Robbie Daymond as Shuichi Saito. He's had a lot of roles, but when I see Robbie Daymond, I only think of him as Tuxedo Mask at this point. That's when I first started paying attention. Christina V as Azami, Doug Stone as Curious father, Aaron LaPlante as Shuichi's father, Mona Marshall as Shuichi's mother, and Max Middleman as Katayama. So, yes. And also the Japan Times newspaper had reported in an interview with Junji Ito in June that the anime is still set to premiere later this year. So keep your hopes up, guys.
Someday.
Miracles can happen.
Now, here's what I want to know, Lindsay.
Yes.
Do you think, even with all the, I get good is not the right word because I feel like, it'll at least be a treat for the eyes, and you know it'll be the story of Uzumaki more or less. I know they're making changes, but if you've read Uzumaki, you can probably guess it. The main things are going to include. Do you think this show has a shot at being scary?
So, here's the thing. The more Junji Ito I read, the less I started finding his stories actually like scary, like in this, like in the way of like unsettling.
Yes, that's fair. I maybe more like effectively. Do you think it'll be able to be like effectively moody and creepy in a way that would?
Oh yeah, yeah. Especially with the score and everything put to it, I think it'll be effectively moody and definitely like creepy. Another tangent. I watched Skinamarink for like the first time last week.
I still need to see that one.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know exactly why it's as divisive as it is, but it's the kind of divisive that I would probably get a kick out of.
Right. So, I mean, I did think it was effectively very scary. And it tapped into, and I saw a lot of comments about this saying similar things. It tapped into a sort of fear that I probably had not experienced in like 25 years. It's this sort of fear you used to have about the liminal spaces in your house at night when you couldn't see things, but you thought you saw something. Yeah. And it's just that the entire time. You never see anyone's face. Everyone talks off screen, long camera holds on like dark hallways at low angles to kind of give you the sense of being small. And it's mostly that for like an hour and a half. So it is challenging, I think, to watch just because like once you get a sense of what it's doing, it is just going to continue to do that.
Yeah.
It is just
it's like
that.
It's probably the closest thing I'm ever going to get to a House of Leaves adaptation. Mm-hmm. And so for that reason alone, I'm definitely curious, but yeah, and that's honestly what I think works about Junji Ito for me. And that's why I've been curious as to whether it's even possible to translate his brand of scary spookiness to motion, because I think so much of what makes his art creepy is his use of the space on the page.
Yeah.
And his use of contrast and shadow and really still image.
Yeah.
I think so much of what makes his art creepy is you imagine how something like that must be moving.
Yeah.
Even though it doesn't make sense. And I feel like one of the inherent impossibilities is no matter how you make it look when it's moving, it's never going to be as creepy as how you imagine
what's
it
in your head. Yeah.
How a guy's body can twist in that shape. And then you see it and you're like, oh, I guess kind of like that.
Yeah. I also kind of worry that the oversaturation of Junji Ito into like the manga fandom is sort of, we've become desensitized to like some of the key images of Uzumaki and some of his other works. So seeing it on the screen now is,
yeah.
I have a t-shirt with that on it, you know.
I know he's like, yeah, he's, I mean, he's like, he's the Stephen King of manga, right? Like he's a brand at this point, you know?
Yeah.
Although speaking of scary, this is not anime related, but I need to get the plug in. My wife and I got to see Long Legs.
Shut up. Don't tell me anything. I want to tell you a thing.
Any of those people whining about it being disappointing. I don't know what the hell they're talking about. All I'm going to say is that movie scared the hell out of me.
Great.
I was terrified.
Fantastic. And, I've avoided reading anything about it. Like I keep seeing like, you know, because Hollywood Reporter Variety is trying to milk it and they're like things you didn't see on screen. I'm like, I don't care. I barely know who's in this movie. I know Nicolas Cage is in it. I don't know what he looks like in the movie. I've only seen the image of, you know, the lady looking out the window, like covering her mouth or whatever. Don't want to know anything. I'm just waiting for like one day where I can get out of the house and someone can watch my kids so I can just go watch it. So
next time we do one of these streams, you can just stick like a mop with like a bucket and like your face drawn on it. And then I can talk with it for a couple of hours and then you can.
It's like she's watching Long Legs. Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. Well, I'm glad that it got a really positive reaction out of you. Cause I couldn't leave the house. So I watched Skinamarink instead of Long Legs. And it was like, I need to watch this anyway. I also watched, been watching a lot of silent horror films from like the 1920s.
Oh, hell
recently with friends. And I watched Gollum, or How He Came to Be, I think is like the full translation. It's German.
Oh man. That one's on my, I have that on, I think my YouTube.
It's why my hair is braided today. I watched it yesterday and The main female character in that film is a rabbi's daughter, and she has double braids like this, but they like reach her knees or something. It's just impossibly long hair and like gorgeous, beautiful.
Silent Horror is so good. Horror is just.
Yes.
That's what I'm so excited for Nosferatu. In that trailer, yes. They were pulling the exact same shadow shots. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay. Eggers, he's got this.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing.
I've seen the original now, and then I also saw the Werner Herzog.
I need to see 1970. That one too.
It's real good, James. It's really freaking good. Using Dracula as like a analogy for like disease and plagues. It's good stuff. Good stuff. All right, guys. If we get on horror talk, James and I could have a separate podcast just about horror. We could. We really could. Which Dracula? Sorry, LFR, what do you mean like which Dracula?
There's like, so many. Like which Dracula is your favorite, maybe?
Probably still Francis Ford Coppola is probably my favorite. Yeah, it's so. Which Dracula is the plague allegory? That's
Nosferatu.
Werner Herzog's version is called Dracula or Nosferatu. No, Dracula the vampire or Nosferatu the vampire. And the vampire is spelled with a Y. That's it. Yeah. That one's really good. It's got some great imagery. Some of it's maybe unintentionally funny. Like you see, Dracula like loading up all of his coffins full of dirt, like himself onto a wagon, and he just like climbs in one. Then you see later they've moved the coffins onto a raft and they're like rowing it, and like dude would not get on a. Anyway, it's just it's pretty funny, but he's great. The makeup and stuff in that is great, and I heard the actor who plays him in that movie is Klaus. It's an alliteration. He was in a lot Klaus of movies. Kinski? Yes. He was in a lot of movies with Werner Herzog. He was notoriously horrible to work with and just like a giant asshole. So, of course, he makes a really good Dracula. I don't know. We'll have to workshop the podcast name, Lewis. If James and I ever have additional time to do another thing. Yes.
We have so much of that.
Right. Okay, so the last thing coming out of Anime Expo, and then we're going to move on to some of these wild-ass premieres, most of which I watched today in sequence. So stick with us here.
It's the preview guide experience.
It is the preview guide experience. I did. I watched them all back-to-back, starting at like 2 p.m. or something. So the last thing coming out is Trigun Stampede. We covered it on this show.
Great show.
Great adaptation with Studio Orange. Underrated. Everyone should go watch it. They announced that the sequel is coming out. I mean, we've known that, but its title is Trigun Stargaze, and it takes place 2.5 years after the end of Trigun Stampede. But they do have some new character designs to show. So here's... Oh, God. X is so hideous now. Here's your Vash. And I believe there is also, hold on, I have to switch tabs so that you can not just look at Knives' feet. But, I mean, his feet are out, so.
I'm excited for the show to go bonkers.
Yeah.
To just absolutely bug nuts bonkers.
Yeah, me too. And then Wolfwood as well, he's still got... still got the shoes, the slip-on Vans.
Yep.
They're a good everyday shoe. And this was actually drawn by Yasuhiro Naito for announcing the Stargaze sequel. And they showed that during the panel. So anyway, don't have an immediate premiere date, but I think this is the final phase. So I think it's supposed to wrap up the entire story. Looking forward to it. I don't know anything about the story as far as like the manga where we left off at. So this will all be new to me. So
I'm excited though. I loved Trigun. I love everything Orange does. They can't miss.
Yeah. I mean, people can keep yelling at them about Land of the Lustrous. I'm sorry that they have, I think leave them alone. I think they've addressed it like multiple times at this point. So if they could make more, I'm sure they would.
Oh, is it like a rights thing or a...
I'd have to like go watch the video, but I mean, I'm sure it has something to do with like the production committee that was involved or yeah, the rights or the whether the original author was happy with it or not, or all these other sorts of, there's a whole bunch of different reasons why they can't just make a second season of Land of the Lustrous. So yeah. The manga is available. Go read it. Okay, James, are you ready to relive the trauma of the last 2 weeks?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's start off with the first one that I watched today, and immediately loved the, one of the actually most of the isekai this season are not bad, but. It's not bad. It's pretty weak praise.
So. I've gotten into like into Jeff Thew's mindset where there are certain shows where it's technically not an isekai, but it has the energy of a crappy light novel isekai.
Yeah.
But no, this one is freaking awesome.
Yeah. So for those of you who haven't watched it, this is Quality Assurance in Another World. I actually watched the dub. The dub for the first episode is already up for this one too. So you can, I liked it well enough. So you can choose which one you want. I might like try episode 2 with a subtitle just to like compare and figure out which one I like more. Our main character who's not shown in here is Haga, who is just this kind of bulky looking redheaded dude. And then our main character, we're only looking at her back here. James, do you recall what her name is? Because I feel like it's Nicola. Is it Nicola?
It's something like that. I could look it up right now. Yeah, Nicola.
Nicola. Okay. And she's just living in kind of a rural area in this kingdom nation on an island, you know, and what you're looking at here are dragons.
Yeah.
And that is immediately one of the best parts of the show because the dragons look like goofy, bloated frogs.
Yeah.
They do breathe fire in the most terrifying way possible, which is their mouth opens, which is full of regular human looking teeth. And then a second mouth comes out of it that's all spiky or whatever. Not really sure like how the contraption works, but it's basically seems like they eject part of like something in their throat or in their gut and then like emit.
Yeah, probably like an actual flamethrower. There's like they're breathing liquid napalm or whatever.
Or something. Yeah, but these are the only real monsters that we've seen. I don't care if it's the only monster in the show. It's a good monster design. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. Little weirdos. Well, they're big weirdos, but I mean, just gross looking, love them. And the entire aesthetic of the show is very unique.
Yeah.
Like as far as the line art and the design, I loved just looking at it.
We already said it was an isekai. I guess this is a mild, are we doing spoilers for the first
episode? Yeah. I mean, it's just the first episode. Yeah. So
at the end of the episode, right, you learn that, Haga is actually a regular dude who got trapped in a video game, dot hack style.
Yeah.
And he is, you know, he's doing this QR stuff to try to like figure a way out, but also there's a lot of stuff going on. But to your point about the art style, this is one of the trapped in a video game isekai where you can tell that the people making it actually thought about a video game that people would like to play.
Yeah.
It's not just like generic anime style, but it actually looks like, you know, the kind of like AA JRPG type of world that has a lot of heart and a lot of like unique monster designs. And that's one of the things I really liked about it, is that it really feels very well thought out and very well realized.
Yeah. So like James touched on, Haga is basically like a QC. Like he signed up, he worked at a tech company, him and like five other people, and they agreed to QC this fully immersive game, sort of online style sort of thing. They have a little tablet that they're supposed to record, you know, bugs that they run into, and they're supposed to be doing things like what real QCers do, which is basically try to break shit and then see if it works and report back so it can be fixed. But they haven't been let out. And so they've been trapped doing that for a year. And he kind of alludes to the fact that like, The other QCers kind of went rogue at one point. And when that
happened, I love that scene, just like a little glimpse of them basically losing their shit.
Like one of the guy goes into debug mode and he's like flying around. It's like, you know, like a setting you can turn on in Minecraft is what that reminded me of. But he insinuates that like after they've done that, they've kind of disappeared. So it almost sounds like there's some sort of person within the company who has done something to them when they quit doing their job. So he's just been doing it over and over again, and it's taken this whole mental toll on him because he gets kind of attached to the NPCs, but then story-wise they're supposed to die, but then Nicola somehow respawns or something like that, right? And
great moment.
Yeah, and so I think they're going to continue traveling together and maybe trying to figure out how to reclaim the world, get him out, that sort of thing. But yeah, I was just kind of struck. I was struck by the presentation of it, and that it still felt very refreshing despite it having sort of the foundations of things we've seen over and over again.
And can I also say, I just got a VR headset for the first time.
Oh yeah.
And I've been,
terrified now to use it?
No,
no. Okay.
Not until they give me a little brain uplink wire or whatever they have. But that's the thing is, something I have a new appreciation and skepticism for with all of these VR, like MMO anime type stories is when I play like Half-Life Alyx on the VR, I'm having a great time. But then when I have to climb up a ladder, I immediately want to throw up because the motion sickness.
Oh, wow.
And so when I'm imagining people like jumping around and doing flips and like sprinting at high speed all up and down a mountainside, I want to know what kind of drugs they're pumping these kids full of so that they're not just puking everywhere, because that's what I would be doing. I now know.
What's that stuff they give you for like motion sickness? Dramamine. Yeah, they're just like pumped full of Dramamine.
Then they just be unconscious.
at least back in the real world, they're just you know. Yeah. Or maybe it's a scenario sort of, I mean, in Sword Art Online, they like literally laid down and then they just put an IV in them when they couldn't get them out. So I don't know.
Guys, if a game company ever tells you to put an IV in your arm, don't do it. Just don't.
Just don't do it.
Nothing they're going to do is worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the next one, this is what I watched next. I tried to keep what order I did in, like, pretty, so nothing was exactly the same as what I had just watched. But so the next one I watched was Senpai is an Otonoko.
Yeah.
And I felt like, wow, this one like touched me like in my heart. And it, I mean, the preview did too. We watched it during preview guide.
It's very sweet.
It's very sweet. I immediately like all three characters, which I feel like this anime like hinges on you liking the core trio, right?
You see, that was my only issue is I like Senpai and I like Senpai's bro that is totally in love with them.
Yeah.
But the main girl I was having a hard time with just because she's a lot.
Like, she's a little high energy.
Like, energy wise.
And she's just a theater kid, James.
But I'm a theater kid.
Yeah.
And I guess I should say there are many kinds of theater kids. Maybe I'm having just like high school PTSD response.
Yeah.
But I didn't dislike her. Like, she's a well-written character. I think for me, I was maybe expecting a slightly more grounded show.
Okay.
And in that first episode, there's like so many of the little like cutaway gags and sides. And when you're doing preview guide and you're having to watch so many shows at once, sometimes you're just not in the mood for like the energy that a show's going after. So maybe I need to give this one another shot because I really liked 2/3 of the cast. I thought they were super compelling. So maybe I just need to give Homegirl another chance.
Yeah, I liked it so much that I had to be like, Lindsay, you can't just watch the second episode of this one. There's other ones you need to watch for the podcast, so you have to come back later. I really enjoyed it. I know it's going to yank my heart out and step on it at least a couple times because so we have the main character here is Makoto Senpai. Makoto Senpai wears a girl's uniform and a wig while at school. And it's sort of hinted early on that their mother is not supportive of this, right? Like there's this scene of Makoto as a child picking out like a folder, some kind of like stationery pouch sort of thing. And it's pink and it's got like hearts on it and stuff. And their mother telling them that one's for girls, you know, just reaffirming the like gender binary immediately, even though that's what they're drawn to. And at this point, Makoto doesn't say outright that they are trans and like that they're a girl and this is them doing the gender expression or a boy. And the male character, who's obviously attracted to him, they've been best friends since they were kids.
Super protective.
Ruji. Yeah, he's kind of, he's the sort of like a aggressive, overly protective guy who hasn't, I think, fully accepted his own sexuality, right? Like he's very obvious, or at least he doesn't want anyone else to know about it. So I would say he's closeted at this point. Yeah. And then you have the main female character whose name is escaping me right now. Is it Minase? Or am I, is that?
Let's pull up the preview guide entry because I can't
James remember. James and I are both not great at this.
I'm not good with names, and especially when I have to learn like 120 names over the course of 4 days.
Yeah.
They just fall right out of my head.
Yeah.
Her name is Saki.
Saki. Okay. Saki. So, you know, that little triangle forms really quickly in the first episode, but it still didn't feel, everything's okay in my kitchen, I promise. It still didn't feel like too rushed for me, I think, even though there is like a lot put in here. But anyway, so yeah.
Well, kids make friends fast. That's something I've just come to realize is you can put like complete strangers in a room in high school and they can become best friends after like 6 hours. So.
Okay. Yeah. But What got me immediately was we don't learn until the very end of the episode that Makoto basically keeps a locker in an abandoned storage shed. And that's where they keep their uniform and wig. And that's the picture that I'm showing on the screen right here is the inside of Makoto's locker because they wear their male school uniform in the morning so their parents don't know. And then they wear it back home. And God, the episode like closes out with them like looking at themselves in the mirror and saying like, goodbye me, I'll see you tomorrow, because they have to go be this unauthentic person at home. And I'm like, I know that's gonna be like a through line, because I think we saw it in the promotional video too. So just expect this one to like, I think it's got like a great cast to like, and jokes and stuff to kind of keep things more lighthearted, but there is, you know, difficulty that they're dealing with as well. So
very real.
Anyway, I loved it. I'm gonna watch episode 2 after we get done with this. So
oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The next one that I watched, what did I watch immediately after that one?
Was it Wisteria?
Actually, this is the one show I got to while I was in California. Okay. I watched it over voice call with my husband because everyone had been saying things about it. And I was like, he'll like this one. It has amazing action scenes. It's, you know, like Harry Potter without the baggage sort of deal. So this is a Wisteria's Wand and Sword, I think is actually the full title of it. And James, you're going to have to help me on the names because I don't remember, but this is our main dude and he wears goggles.
Because I am.
I'm sure they're all fantasy names, right?
Yes. So we have our homeboy, Will. That's easy enough. we have Will, and he is our main guy.
Yeah. And he's a swordsman who can't use magic, but is going to a magic school.
Yeah, he sucks at magic. He's completely incompetent.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, at least one of his professors is pretty much out to get him because of his... There's like this magic superiority complex that everyone has. It's magic is the best ever. If you can't use it, you suck. Yep. Sort of deal.
Again, basically, you know, Snape and
he's basically the Snape. And there's the other professor that he's a little closer to, and he can earn school credits by defeating monsters in a dungeon. So he's just been doing that. He's got a Cabot-like creature that follows him around that can talk. And of course he's got a not girlfriend who just thinks he's the nicest, sweetest guy ever.
Well, he's got two. There's two girls.
Is there two?
There's not girlfriend, friend.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, helping him stay afloat. And then there's whoever the heck, she shows up for like 2 seconds.
Oh, right. The one who like excelled at magic immediately, and now she's at the top of the tower. And
he made a promise to her to.
It's Kaiju number 8 sort of thing, right? Yeah, yeah. But it's all animated spectacularly.
Incredibly, weirdly well.
It was so well, actually, when I was watching it with my husband, I messaged him, like, are they actually overdoing it in some points? Like, just in, like, the conversational stuff, I'm like, I think you guys might almost be flexing too hard to the point where it's, like,
I love that, though. I love that they were, when not Snape and not Dumbledore were, like, arguing with each other, they go the extra mile to, like, really show that Snape is being, like, just a total ass. Like, I don't know. That's the kind of thing where, again, my big worry with any premiere like this is that how's it going to look episode 4?
You know? Yeah.
But if they can keep this up, this is one of the best examples I can think of you can take a totally cliche, trite, been there, done that story.
Yeah.
But if you present it like gangbusters, it's still going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. Also, there's a Draco, and there was a Crabbe and Goyle, and one of them got their entire head smashed in.
Yeah, Crabbe and Goyle are not long for this world.
Yeah,
they did not last.
Yeah, that was one of the few things where, this is me being nitpicky, but I was like, no one is guarding the entrance to this place.
Yeah.
No. You can just go in the dungeon and maybe die anytime
In Harry Potter, you got freaking 11-year-olds wandering around and killing Wizard Hitler. That's multiple true. Times. Like, no multiple one cares times. About these kids. They're expendable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also, we should probably point out that the whole bit is Will isn't just good with the sword. He's like superhumanly, freakishly good with the sword.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like the One Punch Man of swords.
Yes. That's pretty apt description. He is the One Punch Man of swords. But all the background art, again, like all the fight animation, everything, I mean... If you really like solo leveling for like the amazing fight scenes, I feel like this might scratch that part of it for you. Mm-hmm. That was Wistoria of Wand and Sword. Let's do Nokoton, because Nokoton got memed to hell, right? Some say unnaturally so. Whatever. So
an industry plant.
Yeah. I mean, there's stuff going around on Twitter about influencers being contacted to make memes or whatever. I mean, that's marketing for you. I'm not really going to hold it against, I mean, I don't know.
Are you playing the new Hoyoverse game? It's the same. It's worse. It's worse there.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Then the Zone Zero is like 80% of TikTok right now. I don't see anyone.
Oh yeah. I've seen some of the videos from. I'm not really on TikTok, so
I'm not either. I've been hearing from a lot of people because I've been playing Zenless Zone Zero, and when I bring it up, most people are like, "Oh yeah, I've seen like 10,000 advertisements for that thing."
Yeah, on TikTok. The obnoxious gacha game we have in our house for grownups, okay, is Nikkei.
Oh yeah.
Husband's a big fan of that one.
I've had.
I don't need to elaborate on why. If anyone here has played it, okay, no judgment. We have so many acrylic. Yeah, I've shown the sexy lady wall that is on the other side of this computer before. All right, so, So Nokoton. It's giving Excel Saga. It's giving just a particular brand of humor that I feel like maybe I'm just too old for it. That doesn't mean it's wrong or bad or even necessarily juvenile. It's just I do remember watching a show that had this similar vibe in my late teens, early 20s in a community anime club setting. And, you know, people just cracking up at every reference and stuff. And that's fun, I think, in those scenarios. But at home by myself, where you don't really have that energy, it just didn't hit for me.
Yeah. And that's the thing with comedy, you know, it's like, even more than horror, I think, because horror, you can at least easily identify why it does or doesn't work.
Yeah.
But with comedy, I mean, if a joke doesn't hit, then you just don't laugh.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it's not like I didn't feel like it's not like the references were going over my head. I got the Death Note reference in there. You know, they have the Hajime no Ippo reference in there. They have, you know, just the over-exaggerated, silly violence thing, like when she breaks through the wall and all the pieces hit.
You see, and that's where what I like about this show is, you know, it's the same bit as like Asobi Asobase, where it's funny to just take an absurd situation like a girl with antlers walking in and busting the door.
Yeah.
But to me, what makes it funny is like the ridiculous amount of commitment to that really stupid joke.
Yeah.
Like it wouldn't have been as funny if she just walked through the door and people got hit in the face and whatever. But the fact that it's animated in like meticulous slow motion with that stupid chant music.
Yeah.
To me, that was like, I was like, okay, this is like, this is the kind of humor. All the like the Detective Conan jokes.
Yeah.
I didn't, whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of it was maybe not working because the translation is a little, it's a little iffy. The subtitles are a little iffy.
They did fix some of like the timing / spacing issues by the time I watched it. But if you watch this fresh out the gate, it was worse. So the subtitles on episode one now, I think, are fixed. I didn't. Yeah, I didn't notice anything egregious while watching it. Like, I don't know if maybe they could have punched it up a little bit to like get certain things across, but there wasn't any like. It wasn't incredibly stilted or anything when I watched
That's
it
good.
Today.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. But no, I think it's, I mean, and it truly is a matter of whether or not this show continues to be funny for me is going to be, are they going to have more bits like where they spend way too much time and money and effort animating something that has no business being the subject of anyone's train of thought for longer than a few seconds.
Yeah.
I think the other joke that made me laugh was when she's brushing Nokotan at the end,
yeah,
and like her head is just bouncing like a
ball. Jelly bean kind of jelly.
And she's making like that boyoing sound, and I was like, okay, that's like that's
like
funny
Looney Tunes sort of, yeah. I think like I don't think it was objectively not funny. It just didn't quite hit me like I was hoping it would. I don't know if it's better stoned. I was stone cold sober while watching all of this, so
I can see this being.
Like
that bit about the banana she keeps in her horn that we saw in the trailer.
Yeah.
If I was stoned, I would probably hyperventilate into unconsciousness. Like I know myself. That I laugh at when I'm high, and it would definitely be
that. Yeah. So I mean, while we don't condone or encourage inebriation on this podcast, obviously, something to keep in mind if you're over the age of 21 and within certain states where it's legal.
You can live in one of the cool states.
Yeah. All right. Next one. Let's see. Okay. This one was like whiplash to me. So this is the Elusive Samurai. I'm going to watch the second episode of this one immediately as well. But the tonal, we need baked reviews of this, Lizzie. I'll talk to Christopher Ferris. I don't know where he lives. He's reviewing Nokotan for us. Okay. So Elusive Samurai, this is like alternate history Japan taking place in the Kamakura period, and the original manga is by the same guy who did Assassination Classroom. This show is weird. Again, totally very strange. Okay, like the main character here is supposed to become the next shogun. His dad is the current shogun and is just considered kind of a he's a puppet emperor or puppet shogun, and they expect his son to be the same way. So he's not very enthusiastic about taking over the throne. He, you know, blows off all of his official training and all that other kind of stuff. And then he runs into this guy whose name is escaping me. He's a shaman.
Yeah.
And he is wackadoodle, but it does seem like he has legit foresight into the future, perhaps very far into the future, because he goes on to these little like muttering things where it seems like he's considering a lot of variables at once before giving him his fortune. Like he's like following different potential future threads or something like that. But otherwise he's just kind of a weirdo. The girl in the back there is his assistant. She refers to him as father, but I don't know if that's like more in a religious sense than an actual familial sense. But like that would be odd because I'm pretty sure father is usually used strictly for like Catholic priests. So I don't know.
Maybe it's like how the Yakuza all call each other Aniki.
Even though they're not really older brothers to one another. So it's just like the animation is very, very good in the beginning and throughout. But like about halfway through, they're like, yeah, one of the guys betrayed you and is taking over the country and everyone's slaughtered. And it's just like graphic.
Very
graphic.
I was honestly, I love this premiere. I think this is maybe my favorite premiere of this season.
Okay. Yeah.
But, and I think a lot, I like that tonal whiplash.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if the show can thread that needle, because that's a very fine line to walk.
Yeah.
Like for reference, I really struggled back when I, this was years ago now, but I had to review Drifters.
Okay.
By
same guy did
Helsing. Yeah. And same exact style of humor where they'll be in the middle of like a really serious thing or a big fight, and then they'll cut to like a jokey joke.
Yeah.
And that show, it didn't work for me at all. I got annoyed. I was like, stop it. Like, I don't need to laugh right now. Like, just keep going with the story.
Yeah.
But maybe it's because Elusive Samurai looks so freaking gorgeous at all times.
Yeah. It is very, very pretty. I did feel like there was a switch up in the color palette too. The colors were kind of weirdly flat after a certain point. I couldn't figure out why. It's not even necessarily bad. It could have just been a choice, but it was just something that I noticed about the midpoint on.
Is that maybe just color... to emphasize that like his idyllic world.
Is... Maybe it was a conscious choice for that reason. We'll definitely continue watching this. This might be one that like Matt would like to watch with me, although I'll have a hell of a time explaining it to him. Like it's taking place in an era of Japanese history that is prior to the Sengoku period, right? Mm. And so like I know like what I know about the Sengoku period is very limited. And then if you go like before that, like Muromachi and all this other kind of stuff, I'm like lost. But anyway, yeah, I did really enjoy this one. And I've seen a clip of an action scene from season two where it gets like, not season two, episode two, that is also really, really impressive. So this is CloverWorks. I have heard some mutterings that people are like, again, will they be able to hold it together the whole time? Because
they
will find out.
CloverWorks has done some great stuff and they've done some other stuff. So
some other stuff. Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. Wonder Egg Priority. Okay, so the next one, there's a couple about YouTubers, and if I had time I may have watched the one about the VTuber that also gets like drunk, because I heard that one's actually pretty funny. But this is the other YouTuber
I like one. This one a lot more,
okay, personally. Okay, this is Mayonaka Punch. Yeah. This is also by PA Works. There's three PA Works titles this season, if I'm remembering correctly. There's Mayonaka Punch, Sakuna of Rice and Ruin, based on the video game, and one other one that's escaping me right now. But like, they finished all their series in advance, so
yeah,
they should look great.
No delays here, hopefully, unless there's like a sporting event that we gotta.
Yeah,
Nick points out Nari Nari, which
the third one is Nari Nari Cheer.
Also looks incredible, to be honest.
Yeah, I didn't get to that one, but I do want to check it out. Mayonaka Punch here is about the biggest disaster YouTuber combo I could imagine. We've got girl on the left here, not a vampire, but possibly
terrible person,
probably toxic. She was part of a YouTuber trio. She thinks that she's the only reason that they got big. Apparently she's had violent outbursts before, has one on camera, and hits one of the other girls. We don't really know what like the inciting incident of that stream was. I don't know that it necessarily matters, but
well, that's what was so funny to me is the whole time I was expecting a little flashback to show like, oh, they were being super catty, or you know, they were like disrespecting her while smiling, or you know, something to like give us some insight as to why she would do something so like flatly not cool. Yeah. And the whole episode is like, no, she just sucks.
Yeah.
she just sucks. I don't know.
She's just like losing her shit in a cafe while watching their stream, explaining why they've kicked her out of the group because she's a giant asshole. We know that she has sock puppet accounts that she uses to like talk herself up or comment on things to like defend herself. Like entirely too online. She has the brain worms. It's really unfortunate. It's like everything she thinks about is around like going viral and all this other kinds of stuff. It's actually like kind of, it's kind of scary.
And now she's found a vampire that will enable all of those problems.
Yes. The vampire's name is pronounced Live, even though it's spelled live, which is super confusing for me. But Live's been just, you know, sleeping for 20 years in her vampire mansion. Like, it's literally called, like, Bonpai Mansion, which is just vampire.
Yeah.
In Romaji. She's got another little vampire friend who's been trying to manage the bills and lost all their money in the stock market. And so now debt collectors are after them. That was pretty funny. But she's been having dreams about the YouTuber girl. So she agrees to do vampire content with her on YouTube over the promise of if they get a million subscribers, she'll allow her to suck her blood.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's funny.
It is really, it is really funny. Well animated. Like the character designs quite a lot.
Yeah. I had some like spooky like energy in like the hospital scene.
Yeah.
Which again, I mean, I don't think the show is going to be spooky really, but the fact that the direction is capable of doing that is a great sign.
It's, I mean, this is giving me sort of like spiritual sequel to Zombieland Saga.
Yeah.
Just in like, you know, we've gone from zombie idol performers to vampire YouTubers.
Yeah.
Same studio. No, sorry. Zombieland Saga is MAPPA, actually.
Is that MAPPA?
Is it MAPPA?
I don't know.
Someone get in the comments. We're just spouting off without looking into things first.
Oh, no, it's MAPPA.
Okay.
It's MAPPA.
But yeah, it's kind of giving me like a similar vibe. I'll definitely keep watching this one. Also, style's on point. Like, whatever that turtleneck thing she's wearing is cool. And they have like a whole new world, Aladdin-esque scene here at the end of the episode too, which is great. So yeah, really liked that one. And I think this is the last one I think I said we would talk about today.
Yeah, so
I had to get to Oshinoko season 2, put it right into my veins, which is weird for me because I really enjoyed season 1, but by the time we got to the end, I was kind of tepid on like where it wrapped up. Yeah. It didn't really wrap up in a place where I was like, okay, give me season 2. It just sort of
fizzled
a little there.
That's good.
But then I really liked this premiere.
So good.
A lot.
So good.
Yeah.
All of the behind the scenes stuff about the manga industry and the theater industry and how they intersect.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest. I mean, I think I said this in my premiere. The less time the show spends on Aqua and his whole murder mystery deal, the happier I am, because I could just watch a whole show about these kids putting on a play. I don't care about the murder mystery, to be honest.
Yeah.
But this stuff is so good. What's your name? The awkward girlfriend.
Is this one Minami?
Yeah.
I think the other girl Minami earlier. Or
Kana. One of her.
Kana is the one with the shorter red hair.
Right. Okay.
The one we're seeing the back of here with like the longer blue hair, the one who got bullied, I believe, is Akane. Thank you, everyone. For keeping us honest on the show.
Thank you.
I was like, who's Minami? Why do I keep talking about Minami?
her whole thing, like trying to figure out how to work with a character who kind of sucks, like just a badly written character.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I just love it. I love all of it. It's so good.
Yeah, and I liked Kana a lot in this episode too. Like, she paired up with, you know, the new guy who's like the star of that particular acting troupe. And the dude who kind of sucked from the show that Aqua was on, and they're all collaborating together because their roles interact the most. I agree with you a lot about Aqua, actually. I am interested in the murder mystery, but I just find like Aqua's, I don't know if you call it like nihilism necessarily, but his just general disinterest.
He doesn't feel like a real person to me. Like, anytime he talks, he feels like, It feels like everyone around him is a fairly, and you know, a relatively normal, real human being.
Yeah.
For the universe that they live in.
You're right.
And he feels like Light Yagami.
Yeah.
Like, he feels more like a, like an author insert, like.
Kind of. Light, I don't know. Light Yagami at least was smart enough to know that you have to fake a certain persona to get people to like you and give you information. Like, that's the part that, like, kind of pisses me off is that.
Yeah, he was he was good at being a sociopath.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas Aqua is like, yeah, I need to solve my mom's murder and I don't want to be an actress. Like, you idiot. Whoever killed her is involved in this industry. How are you going to find anything out from anyone if you can't at least play it up enough to get them to want to talk to you, to find out things? No one's going to confide in you if you're like sad in a corner.
You don't get anywhere in the industry if you don't brown nose. Like, your life depends on it. That's the whole thing.
He's
like,
bad at detectiving. And so it annoys me.
I know. It's and I think it was telling that in the episodes, at least the first episode, like, he's barely in it.
Yeah.
Like, he's literally just like hanging out in the background because he doesn't want to be friends with anyone. And so all the other more interesting characters get a bunch of stuff to do. And I was like, hell yeah, more.
Yeah. And then we just have Akane when she's like grappling with how to approach her role. He just kind of like walks up to the table and he's like, she has a question.
Yeah. I know. That did make me laugh.
Yeah.
I did laugh. He just has no concern over social mores whatsoever.
Yeah.
Although, again, that's the kind of thing you don't like. Again, every director is different, but I mean, come on. This is an industry where it is well known that if you just go up to the people in charge and say, I don't really like what's happening, if you don't have cred, they don't care. Listen to you. Like, you say, shut up and learn your lines, or we'll find someone else to play the
part. We don't have time for this. I mean, and then the episode ends with the mangaka coming on, and she's like, yeah, I hate your whole script. Can you, of course, like, very kind of demure, like, I'd like you to rewrite the entire thing, which is just going to cause.
Her to be the main character. Like, give me a show just about her and, like, trying to get her manga to not be butchered by
that. Yeah. Yeah. I don't
know. But also the fact that, I mean, the writer made a lot of good points where it's like, look, we have 2 hours to tell this story.
Yeah.
And we have to play to the back of the crowd. And we don't have time, we don't have internal monologues. We don't have close-ups.
Yeah.
And so this character who depends on a lot of that, she's gonna get the short, you know.
Yeah. I thought they actually did a really good job explaining that. There was a bunch of great research that went into the manga to properly like illustrate how this industry works, both negative and you know, positive. And in this case, you know, we have a writer who's like, yeah, I know it doesn't follow the manga, and yeah, I know I butchered the character, but due to all of these other reasons, we had to do something.
I had a job to do. that job was to turn in a script.
Yeah,
I think it performed.
It's like a good thing to keep in mind when you're watching any kind of adaptation that from like an original work. With a manga, you can always go at your own pace. You can go back and reread something or like focus on whatever panels you want to focus on as you're reading. But when you're adapting that, especially into a live action play, like you were saying, you can do certain things maybe with the camera for what appears on the larger screens or whatever, like even during a concert and stuff like that. But I liked how he explained, we can't give every single character their intriguing backstory because the audience will lose track of things. Yeah. I mean, I've watched movies where they got too convoluted and it's like, or we talked about this with Yatagarasu and how, you know,
it's hard to do. And they don't have a whole season. They have two hours. That's it.
Yeah.
Telling a complete story in 2 hours is actually very hard.
Yeah.
Especially when you're taking a story that was not meant to be told in 2 hours.
Exactly.
That's why book adaptations struggle, because books can last for 20 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can, you know, again, you can have time to like sit with it and then sort of figure it out before moving on to a next chapter or something. So yeah. I'll probably be watching the second episode of that immediately after this as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, a lot of great, anime this season. James, since I had the joy of only watching the ones after you guys watched them all, so I knew that they were good first. why don't we close out with, do you feel comfortable telling everybody what the worst / most boring premiere you?
The worst is easy, actually.
Okay.
The worst was wait, was it Journey? No, it wasn't Journey Through Another World. That was close.
The worst one was the kids. Yeah.
Yeah. That one sucked. No, the worst one was, I can't even remember the title. It was the one.
Is it Osan?
No.
No.
A Nobody's Way Up to an Exploration Hero. That show is garbage. That show gave me Fruit of Evolution vibes. I'm not
Did it really?
It was one of those shows where every single thing that it did on every level was just wrong.
Yeah.
And not even in like a cool way. Like, oh, it wasn't even like X-Arm wrong, where they failed so catastrophically it'll be in the history books forever.
Yeah.
It was just, oh no, the editing is wrong. The animation's wrong. The writing isn't even there. It's all wrong. It's all bad. It was excruciating. That was the premiere that maybe took me an hour to watch, because every 3 minutes I would like pause it and get distracted because I just couldn't handle it. It was so bad.
Okay. It was so bad. I usually can tell which one is going to be worse because I can't remember anything anyone wrote about it, which usually means everyone who had to watch it like was just like,
what do we say?
Nick, who also worked on Preview Guide, is in the comments, and he says the worst one was the show where the hero feeds rocks to little girls.
I think it's that one, right? That's that one.
Is that one? Is the same one?
I don't. Now I'm. Is it not that one? Is there another weird little girl eating anime that I'm forgetting? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, Nobody Explorer. I guess he feeds the girls rocks. Okay.
Yeah, it's stupid and weird and bad. So.
Okay. Well, before we sign off, he feeds them rocks to power up his little girl Pokemon so they can fight for him. Did you say you wanted to talk about your Delicious in Dungeon experience at AX? Oh, hey, thank H-Field. You know what? Yeah, I'll do that before we sign off. Okay. Wild. Please stay tuned to Anime News Network. I got the opportunity to interview manga creator Roko Kui while I was there in person. So I got to talk to her about a lot of interesting things about the manga. And I'm getting that worked out. But I had whiplash. Well, okay. I had like a whiplash experience involving Delicious in Dungeon while I was at AX. Before I get to that, we also have the Kadokawa booth. So Anime News Network is, you know, co-owned by Kadokawa World Entertainment, which is owned by Kadokawa, which owns a whole bunch of things. So we have the ANN booth, and it's like adjacent to the larger Kadokawa booth, which had exclusive merchandise, like limited merchandise at Anime Expo. I was lucky enough to get in line when it opened and got myself two Delicious in Dungeon acrylics. They had more things, but they were expensive. So I went with these. Just a moment. I will show you my treasures.
Now, are they decently sized acrylics, I wonder?
Because these have little stands that they sit on, but...
Those are small.
I decided to go Senshi themed. So I have an acrylic that shows Senshi's house.
Okay, so I was just saying to the chat that my biggest thing with acrylics is the ones I've gotten are always so tiny.
I also have a really big one of Senshi that we bought in Japan that's like huge, but it's hard on camera to see it.
Oh, it's Senshi looking big.
Yeah, here. If I do this, you can... see it. Yeah, this is Senshi in his underwear reading a book.
Which I hope I can be that hot when I'm middle aged.
you gotta get the beard. He's got a man bun back here. Yeah. This sold out. So
yes, it did.
There was only like I think 200 of them or something like that. Let me put these back really quick. So that I don't misplace them.
I hope in season 2 of Dungeon Meshi they just crank up the Senshi fan service.
Those are my two Senshi treasures. And then I also got to interview Roko Kui. And then I went, the whiplash incident is I went to the Delicious in Dungeon trigger panel where they were going to do a live drawing. They brought some of the folks who worked on the show to Anime Expo for the very first time. And this was just a for me sort of thing, right? So like sitting there watching it, and they get through like the intros and they're about to like bring out some of the other guests. And then two people commandeered the stage, which I've never seen that happen at any con I've ever been to. especially with like security and everything like that. People might have heard about this on social media. There were some videos and pictures and whatnot. A person like got on stage, and I guess they were singing like a panty and stocking song is what it was, and doing like a whole like dance performance with it, while the other person was playing the song through what I assume was a speaker in a backpack while waving a giant anarchy flag. And everyone in the audience was like confused at first, because trigger panels are kind of wild. Sure. To start with, right? Like, you know,
yeah,
and
it's triggering. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So we're, and you can go to panels that sometimes have professional cosplayers at them that do things. So we thought that that's what it was. And it took a little while for the audience to pick up on the fact that this was not planned. So they started booing and all of that. And then the person who was doing the dance performance, they were just wearing like a denim jacket with like nothing underneath. So they flashed the crowd and like flipped us off. And then security, I assume, you know, they're not cops. They can't usually legally actually put their hands on you, in my, as far as like I know, in those situations. So they're just like trying to coax them off the stage and then coax them out, because they can't physically remove them. They're not like bouncers or whatever. So so that was wild. It lasted longer than I expected to, and we didn't really know what was going to happen. And then and then the panel went on as expected. And if you've been to a trigger panel, they usually give stuff away at the end, but you have to win multiple rounds of rock, paper, scissors. So what they do is like they have one of the staff members like choose rock, paper, scissors or whatever. And you only get to stay standing up if you beat them. You can't tie. So if you tie or, you know, don't, you sit down. And I've played it maybe a couple times, depending on like what series it was or whatever. The odds of winning, of course, are low.
Sure.
I won.
Hey.
Hey, I was one of like six people who won a shikishi drawn by the character designer of Delicious in Dungeon. And pretty I got cool. The Fallon one as well. I had to win like six rounds in a row of rock, paper, scissors. I don't know what the odds of that are. I feel like it's low.
You did good.
I won six rounds of rock, paper, scissors. And then I had to draw a playing card from a deck and get a number. Two of them had faces on them. So if you got a face card, you were actually out. So multiple rounds of elimination. I've never been so lucky in my life. So I guess I'll show you guys that.
Yeah, I want to see this. Ooh.
It's still, of course, in the plastic wrapping, but
oh my goodness.
Yeah and by Naoki Takeda, and I posted on Twitter when I got it, and someone immediately offered me a ridiculous amount of money for it.
I was gonna say that's gonna appreciate in value, I do think.
I mean, it could, I don't know, it might be one of those things where like it's hit its height right now because the manga just ended in English, but we got the second anime season coming or something, but it doesn't matter. I'm not selling.
I mean, Delicious in Dungeon, that's one of those shows where I've talked to like normal people who know what it is now because of Netflix.
Yeah.
So yeah, that show is a hit.
I believe. So I don't know. I'll hold on to it just in the, I mean, I'm going to hold on to it. Knock on wood. I guess it can be a nest egg if something really bad happened, but I don't foresee that happening. So yeah, I don't know. They filmed the entire thing, especially us getting the prizes at the end. So if you watch the Trigger YouTube channel, eventually there may be a video up where I scream like a lot. So look for that, I guess, as well. But I think that about wraps us up for this week. We'll be back next week. I think Yatagarasu will be back as well next week. And James and I will confer privately about like what other show to add to the Yatagarasu docket. If you have any thoughts on what you would like us to be talking about every week, leave us a comment on the video. You can help choose, I guess, what we're talking about. But expect, of course, more birds. Bird show returns next week. So that said, thanks everybody for joining us for the ANN After Show. See you next Tuesday, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Bye.
Bye-bye.